Welcome back, WNST, Tass in Baltimore, and WNST. We're Baltimore positive, so positive. Oh, it's this side of the hat. I want to make sure I get the hat in there.
It was a good week.
It has been a great week around
here.
It
has been.
Obviously, we are in the heart of Baltimore. We're down here at Lexington Market at Fadley's. Come down, get a crab cake. They're delicious. And we've tried to bring as many people, and we've been chasing you for about 6 months, Bill Ferguson.
Been a busy year. Busy year, I promise you.
A little bit going on.
Well, I mean, we're trying to keep horse races. We're trying to get Kirby. We got a million things happening
around
here. That's
it. We do. And the vast majority of them are positive. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, I was sort of mentioning beforehand, that we're in this really weird space in the city where there are all of these incredible projects. You look out across the city, you'll see kind of more cranes up in the air than we've seen in a very long time. And yet, because of crime and some of these systemic issues, we have this duality of life with all this hope and then all these challenges. And for me, I sort of look at it and say, like, gosh, this is what we've... Imagine if we didn't have the other side. Imagine if we were able to figure out sort of how to make opportunity more expansive. I mean, we would be able to rocket launch out of here.
Well, you certainly, Senator, you're one of Baltimore, I say, strongest advocates. And we're very fortunate, I think, particularly in the General Assembly and in the county. We have people who truly believe in Baltimore City. Many of them, what I'm struck by with you is that many of them are homegrown. They're Baltimore guys, Baltimore gals. You grew up in Silver Spring. Yep. You didn't grow up in Baltimore. So tell us how a Silver Spring guy, certainly different to be in Silver Spring, but ends up in Baltimore and so committed to Baltimore.
I mean, I would say sort of first and foremost, Baltimore taught me everything I really needed to know. I grew up outside of D.C., and the way I landed here was through a program called Teach for America. So I taught at 9th, 10th, 11th graders in U.S. history and U.S. government at what was Southwestern High School. And I'll tell you, growing up in Silver Spring, I was very fortunate and felt very blessed, but didn't understand kind of what poverty was, the inequalities that exist in our world. And, you know, I came to Baltimore to teach and thought like I was going to be this excited, you know, change the world, really have all this energy. And then I started teaching. And it just blew my mind what the expectations, what we allowed to be expected in the richest state in the richest country in the world.
You mean lowering the bar?
It wasn't the kids, right? The kids were doing what we asked them to do. It was expectations of what they should be able to handle that was just totally unacceptable. You know, I taught in a building, then I always sort of tell the story that my wife, who wasn't my wife at the time, taught next door to me, and she had a window that was sort of broken and hinged open. And it was one of these days where, how in Baltimore where it'll snow, but not really snow. So school wasn't canceled, and we come into school, and, we walk into her classroom, and there's snow on the ground in her classroom. And so we had to go out and get a shovel and shovel snow out of the classroom before kids got there. And that was just expected, like, yeah, you got to deal with that. This is Baltimore City. Like, that's not okay. That's crazy. And so I think it's about changing those expectations that has fundamentally kind of changed who I am and what I care about, because it doesn't have to be this way. I mean, we aren't where we are. It's not inevitable that we face these struggles. It is choices over time, and it'll be intentional choices that get us out of it.
Go ahead.
In some cases, it's the courage of politicians, as I see it, And I talk about clean water. We talk about how lead paint went on here, how redlining, all of the things that are horrible that have happened, but undoing them to some degree. I mean, I talk about civic projects. Like, I was out the other day at Maglev, what that would mean, a 15-minute. Baltimore could become Brooklyn, right? And I go to New York and I see how much courage it took to build subways, to build public transportation so people could get around.
Yeah.
There needs to be some courage.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've really suffered a lack of is a clear vision. I think in the last few years, we've really, unlike a lot of other cities, we've had to own a lot of the junk, right? We've really had to kind of take a hard look at the things that got us to where we are, issues around race and class and structures and systems. And so while that's been really hard and painful and has let people really feel this kind of angst, to me, it's actually an opportunity because it's now on the surface. And so we are kind of a city that has the possibility to be one of the ones that gets through it, unlike others that are sort of hiding these issues or kind of keeping them below the surface. We have this moment in time. I always sort of joke, if you want easy, go to Boston, right? Like, if you want easy, go to Austin, go to Seattle. Like, go, kind of live your life, close your door.
Yeah, they fixed those places 25 years ago or tried to, right?
Like, if you really want to change the world, come to Baltimore. This is where we are the front, and we are the vanguard.
Like New Orleans after the storm, right?
This is
so many assets. I mean, it's interesting, Senator, when you talk about that. We had J.M. Shapiro on. He's working with Baltimore Homecoming. This incredible initiative to tap into Baltimore alumni
Yep.
All across the country. And what I was struck by, Nestor, I don't know about you, was how he said when he reaches out to the Barry Levinsons or the Josh Charles or the Julie Bowens or the Duff Goldmans, they can't wait to help.
Right.
Because they are Baltimore.
I think there are a lot of people that are sort of sitting on the sidelines at the moment, just waiting to find a way to tap in. And that's the challenge. I think we have not had a clear vision for how we get through this, and we're sort of spinning our wheels in a lot of different ways. And if there were a clear vision that people could get behind, not everybody's going to be happy, but if there were just a clear, this is where we're going to go. The next 5 years, these 10 things are what we are going to accomplish. And people just said, okay, I see my place in that. I think you would see people coming off the sidelines and saying, all right, I'm part of the team. I'm on the bus. Let's get this done.
I just want to do a reset here because we got Bill Ferguson. I would get your back. Why did you get involved? In case somebody's not familiar with you, what was the moment?
How does a teacher become a respected state senator?
Yeah, how does a teacher become a county executive? I've been trying to figure that out since 1982 with him. I've watched his journey, but I think everyone comes into it differently.
Yeah.
And there's such a stigma now with politics and politicians. We're about to have a president literally impeached, clearly has stood up in front of it. The three of us can agree that we're not down with what's going on here. When the rest of the population, it's going to peel back even more of all politicians are corrupt. And then there are people, you're my son's age. Mm-hmm. Like, that's sort of weird. That gives me, that's sort of crazy for me. Born in 83.
Generation.
My son was born in 84.
There you
right?
go.
So you're a year old. You're Luke's age, right?
Right.
Luke's 83 as well. You know, I'm inspired by watching younger people want to step up to save the world because I didn't feel that way when I was 30 years old. What? I feel much more that way at 50 watching my city and the country. That's why we're doing this, quite frankly. That's why you're out of bed this morning.
Right.
And I'm not talking about box stores anymore.
Right. No, fair. I mean, I think younger people are inspiring me, too. I mean, I think there is this new sense of social activism that is very tangible and important. The key, I think, that we are trying to figure out how to do is channeling that. So there is a lot of angst and frustration, but I would say young people are more involved and engaged than I could even have ever imagined have been.
Are we
as a
really
teenager.
Registering them to vote? Are they really going to vote next November?
I believe so. I mean, I believe it's starting.
Young
I think
politicians need young voters, right?
No question. I mean, it's a crucial component of this.
Our nation needs young voters.
I mean, lack of voting is a sign of people just distrusting the system. Right. So I think it is, you know, we sort of like, it's because people don't think it matters. And until we as politicians and as people in the public sector can prove that we can get stuff done, people won't vote because they just feel like, it's this guy, that gal, that, you know. It doesn't matter. It's the same. You change the people, same outcomes. We have got to prove that we can win again and that we can get stuff done. And I think that's fundamentally this opportunity that like we have an enormous amount of our population that just for good reason in many cases just doesn't believe, right? They just don't believe that change is possible. And I think we have glimmers of hope. So I tell you the story about what got me angry when I was teaching.
The snow in the room.
Well, the other thing is I had a doorknob for my classroom door. I didn't have a doorknob, right? So I had to carry around a pair of scissors. So if a ninth grade student had to go to the bathroom, I had to take out a pair of scissors in my pocket and literally jerry-rig break out of my door for an entire year because the thought was, well, it's Baltimore City. Why would you know, we can't fix that. We don't have janitors, right? Yeah, so you know, that just to me was like mind-boggling. How is this even humanly possible? You go 10 miles across the road and we're in some of the richest counties of the world.
Right.
And it's not their fault necessarily. It's about why have we allowed expectations to be so different for different groups of people? And so so it was anger that got me into this. And, you know, I wrote what I sort of joke as the Jerry Maguire letter to all of the elected officials in Baltimore. It was sort of like, you must not have seen the conditions of this building, because if you had seen the conditions, it wouldn't be like this. Like, can you please come out? I'll lick stamps and envelopes.
As a citizen, you wouldn't settle for this.
Right. And so only one person wrote back, and it was Sheila Dixon. And so within 24 hours, Sheila Dixon wrote back and
said... Was she mayor at the time?
She was council president.
Okay.
And, what year are we talking about here?
This was 05.
You're a young man then.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You're a first-year teacher.
I mean, I was incredibly naive. I was, you know... I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was just sort of like, this is crazy. Something must be wrong.
I got to talk to your boss. Who's your boss, right?
And she wrote back 24 hours. She said, I need to meet with you. So 3 days later, I was in her office. She said, I was a teacher. I know exactly what you're saying. I'm as angry as you. We need more people telling the story so we can build the momentum. And she said, I need people to work for me at night, going to communities, telling the story so that we can start to build the case for why we need these important investments in communities. So lo and behold, I was teaching during the day and then working for then Council President Dixon at night in the community. And what I started to see was that the what was str- The struggles that we had in school were the exact same, just in different formats in neighborhoods. It was about, you know, just different levels of access, different levels of investment, and, you know, these just deep frustrations where people just say, like, this isn't right, but we can't quite see how to move it to the next level. But I will never forget then Council President Dixon, who just said, you know, we have got to build the momentum around believing in better. And so, you know, that's how I got into
like
this.
That,
I never
believing
thought
believing in better. And at your singing out of your songbook, you know, we either get better or worse. How many times do you say that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had asked myself a question a year and a half ago. Can it be fixed? You know, can the next mayor fix it? Is it fixable? And it was such a terrible question to ask, right? I mean, you ask a good question, you get good answer. You ask a lousy question, you get a horrible answer, right? The question is, can you make it better? Can I make it better? Can we make it better with either Baltimore Positive or coming together with some leaders and saying the doorknob's broken? Let's not just stare at it and say, who's going to fix it?
Yeah.
Let's say, how do we get it fixed?
So I think, I mean, you know, the sort of tried and true thing of it's not... It's not what your country can do. It's what you can do for your country. I mean, I think one of the traps I think we have in Baltimore is that we always look for the next Superman or Superwoman. Right. And
Barbara Mikulski, yep, same words.
Absolutely.
She's absolutely right.
She said, there's no Superman coming over to help. And she pointed at us.
It is every single one of our responsibilities to do. And that's the thing is that you look at any business and a nonprofit. Yeah, I agree.
Well,
same here. Trust me. When she tells me to do something, she says jump. I say hello.
Well, it's interesting because last week when we asked J.M. Shapiro the question about the role that development can play in this, it was really interesting. He was crystal clear, built on what Malia Cromer had said earlier. There really are themes developing because what J.M. said was we've got to help not only the big guys who are doing things like, you know, Harbor East and Port Covington and others, but we have to focus on the small guys in the neighborhoods. We have to get it to the neighborhoods. Yeah. There's a neighborhood theme developing in Baltimore.
In a city like Baltimore, it's unlike a New York or a Boston or a Seattle. The neighborhood nature of the city of Baltimore is absolutely the heart and soul. And so, you know, one of the funny things, I represent the 46th district, right? So it's got, you know, we go from Federal Hill to Cherry Hill, one of the highest median incomes to one of the lowest median incomes. But what I continually come back to is this recognition that no matter what neighborhood you're in, no matter your race, no matter your class, there are these fundamental values. People want to be somewhere safe where they can raise a family. They want a job where they can raise their family successfully, and they want to be a citizen. That is, everybody wants the same thing. And so The question is, how do we apply it in the right ways based on the context? And that's the key for Baltimore, is that there's no one strategy. There's no one thing we need to do. We need to do a lot of things with some core values that are applied differently by neighborhood and make the neighborhoods the strength of the city.
Well, it's interesting, Senator, when you talk about that, we got to do some things well, core values. And one of our very first, it had to be one of our very first episodes because it was back in May. Nestor and I were struck, and we actually talked with folks who were on the show, your outrage about, once again, the pools not being ready to open.
I mean, that
on
was
Memorial Day weekend. Talk about that, because it really struck us.
He's brought it up. You know, these are things that happen every year.
Memorial Day doesn't fluctuate.
It's water
it's
and it's
basics.
Chlorine.
We know, Memorial Day is coming every year.
Every year.
Every year. So it's not like we have to figure out when the pool when the
he's done a lot of radio.
For those of you listening, Nestor's moved me around because I keep getting out of the shot.
He keeps turning his shot back into the shot.
But talk about the issue about the pools. And actually, you had a pretty positive interaction with the mayor.
Yeah,
you
no,
were
I
complimentary
I, look,
about that.
I will tell you, Mayor Young and I have had a lot of very deep, hard conversations about where the focus needs to be. Look, I would love to do Maglev. I would love to do all of State Center, all of these kind of big projects. But fundamentally, we got to prove people that we can do the little things right. We've got to start getting wins and quick wins. And I think
things we've already paid for, we got to get right.
Yeah, you look at the Orioles, right? Let's take the Orioles as a good example, right?
This was a tough year.
I know.
You understand you're going to get us yelling at one another. Go ahead, Senator.
Look, I'm the guy that fell asleep on the Nationals last night. By the time this airs, they will have had a parade and everything.
That's right, exactly.
Just ask Len Foxwell. He'll tell you.
Fair. That's true. He was up last night, I'm sure.
Len Foxwell is a happy man this morning. Congratulations, Mr. Foxwell.
Yes. But I think, you know, look at the way that the Orioles have approached a rebuild. It's the same fundamental principles apply. You can't just expect, like, I'm going to go get this guy on free agency and bring him in and everything's going to change. That's not how sophisticated institutions and organizations work. You've got to start saying, all right, let's get back to basics. We got to start fresh. We got to build from strength. We got to find the areas of where we have competitive advantage. We got to invest in those. And we just have to build the organization. And
I think, where is that? Where do we have competitive advantage?
I mean, in the basics, picking up trash, getting the pools open on time, making sure that the transportation system works.
Potholes.
Making sure that stop signs get put in. Right now, I know we have hundreds of signs in backlog. We've got a great new DOT director who's jumping on this, but it's the basics, putting stripes on the lines of the streets when somebody requests to have a stop sign, that they actually get a line on the street. These basic fundamental principles just have to be done every single day effectively. And there's got to be accountability, making sure that those systems are in place so that we get the basics right. Now we can start talking about the bigger stuff. People believe us.
Let's dig down on that a little bit as we get close to a break. Talking about what you just said, because again, that's Nestor's passion. Let's get the little things right. I referred to it one time in an earlier podcast, is whoever the next mayor is has to have a hatred of incompetence.
Yes.
You just have to hate incompetence. So you've been in government a while now. You've certainly worked closely with city officials. Tell us how we make that happen. Forget the who's sitting in the office. What do we need to do to hold people accountable so that they're doing the things you're talking about?
Yeah, I think when people hear accountability, a lot of times they hear it as a as like a threat, right? So if you're holding accountable means somebody's got to get fired. I actually have a little bit of a different perspective, and I think it goes back to my days in teaching. You know, when it comes down to sort of basic, the basic idea that you learn in kindergarten. If you have high expectations for people, generally, for the most part, if you give them clear expectations that are high and then you give them the support they need to get there, people want to meet that bar. I mean, I think you see it in classrooms with kids that have really struggled. But if you say, I know that you can achieve, you have proven here, here, and here that you can get there, I am committed to giving you the support that you need to get there, that's where kids want to be. They want to meet the expectations that are set. And so I feel like it's very similar when it comes to government. We have to be very clear about what the expectation is. We need to say, if you're not there, we will provide you the support that you need to get there. And if with that support you're still not there, then we need to make changes and we need to find a better role. But it's got to be about setting those high expectations and everybody being willing to say, we're going to have the tough conversations. We're going to support you where needed. And if it doesn't work, then we're going to figure out a way. But it's got, I believe fundamentally people want to do well. I think that is who we are. As humans, that's what we're built for. We want to do good things for people.
Well, one of the encouraging things, we have to want to do good things for people, is so well said. And one of the good things, or the, I guess one of the gratifying things that we found in terms of doing this, is the number of people who will stop us, come up and say, you're right, we're all in it together. I mean, I hardly go anywhere now where someone doesn't talk about making the city better. And we have these great sponsors here at Fadley's and Jennings.
Well, it's not
and
only
State
that,
Fair.
But
people see it.
Even with the Preakness, and Bill Cole's going to be
we'll come
be
back
a guest
to a whole segment
yeah,
on the Preakness.
And the other Bill Cole, because I'm wearing the Cole roofing hat. Two Bill Coles in my life. I got a lot of Bill Coles. But even in this case, Johnny O, Stuart Pittman, a part of this thing. We had Calvin Ball here 2 weeks ago. Ben Cardin, Johnson. The people we've just had recently, including Brandon Scott, who sat here, is running for mayor, and Jack Young, who is the mayor. All of these people come with ideas, and I say this as a citizen, and this is just a guy in the city that has seen the dirt bikes go in front of my house every Sunday. I've walked through the city. I've seen, you see the video that Fox 45 puts out every time something crazy happens. I feel like there's a perception that the people abiding by the law aren't winning, right? That the people breaking the law, which are this many of the people, are the people controlling all the rest of the people. And I would really hope that in 2020, when we make a mayor, make a government, set a path, that we really are looking out for the people who want to abide by the law, that we should be the ones running the city, not the other way around. And that's what got me started 15 months ago in this.
Go ahead.
I mean, if we want to dive deeper into Preakness, but let me just use Preakness as an example.
Yeah, we'll come back after do it a little bit, and then we'll come back and take a deep dive into the Preakness.
So the thing about the Preakness, take the horse race. I grew up in a horse racing family. My grandfather owned a couple of horses. He was a partial owner of horses, and I have these early memories of my grandfather, who since passed away. When I was like 8, 9, he would be we would be sitting at Laurel, and he would be standing on top of a picnic table screaming obscenities, and I would be sitting there with my head down, saying like, "Oh my God." God.
Come on, Seabiscuit.
So, I like your family. good stock.
Horse racing is an important thing. But, you know, to me, it's about more than horse racing. I think we have to find examples like the Preakness in Pimlico in Baltimore where we have these things that can unify a regional approach to investment, but are really core to building neighborhoods. The key thing of Pimlico, the key feature of Pimlico and the racetrack investment is that it stimulates all of the surrounding investment that is right adjacent to neighborhoods that have struggled for so long to find long-term capital. So,
yeah, whatever this is, it has to solve that.
What we know would not solve it is a chain link fence around 80 right. acres of property in the middle there that would just sit vacant for 20 years. That will do nothing. And so the beauty of this project is that, one, it does impact positively the horse racing industry. Two, it's a regional approach. This is good for Baltimore City, but it's also important for Hartford, for Baltimore County, for Anne Arundel. And third, it gives us a real opportunity to take investments and move them into neighborhood development. And that is the type of project that I think is core to how the city's, it's sort of a good guide path for how the city needs to develop moving forward.
Do you think your friend Sandy Rosenberg slept well this week?
I think he slept better this week than he has in probably the last 15 years.
Yeah, we need to get Sandy on.
But we still have a long way to go. I think
we're
going to
talk about that in the next segment. Also, I'd like to open up the next segment when we come back. The most inspirational segment we've done now out of 70 has been our sit down with Sarah Heminger in Thread. And when you and I chatted, I had no idea that you have a personal connection. We won't give it away. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the Senator's connection to Thread.
All right. We're here with Bill Ferguson. I've got Don Moeller here. We're at Faithies. We got to give some love to all of our sponsors.
Absolutely.
Because right? we're about to go on a little bit of a break because it's bye week.
And, you That's
know,
right.
So I'm getting my Ravens in. So we get the bye week. We're going to be John Sarbanes, Ben Cardin. Bill's going to be joining us, and then after that, we have like a whole litany of
Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones, Delegate Maggie McIntosh. We got really great. We're going to be talking to a lot of people. What we're really excited about, Senator, is we're going to be talking to Mike Sipe of Southwest Development Corporation, Adam Rosenberg with Baltimore Child Abuse Center. People really
are doing great work.
Chris Battaglia, a principal at
Chris is phenomenal. Mason, I mean, talk about a hero in Baltimore. I mean, Chris Battaglia has taken a school that was, on the deathbed. I mean, we had barely had any enrollment, and full disclosure, one of my best friends is the assistant principal there. Came in with Chris.
You're allowed to have friends,
right? Exactly.
You're allowed to have.
Well, we're
going to
talk to him later.
What they've done
today
is incredible. It's magic.
Chris is truly, again, what we're finding and what's so exciting and why we get so pumped up. It's not only Smalltimore, but there are just nuggets and nuggets of people making an incredible difference. We're going to be back.
All right. We're at Jennings next week. We're at State Fair as well. Find us on Baltimore Positive. Back for more. Segment 2, episode 80 with Bill Ferguson.